Hey there, I'm Tal Zlotnitsky from Ignite IT Consulting. You know me from the Braving Business podcast, but when I'm not behind the mic, I'm helping tech startups and established companies ignite their full potential. I also help entrepreneurs and businesses in distress reset for success. With over three decades of entrepreneurial success, I bring hands-on experience to drive growth, navigate turnarounds, raise capital, and lead through innovation. Whether it's executive coaching or strategic transformation, I'm here to turn your business challenges into success stories. Visit igniteitconsulting.com and let's spark that change together. That's igniteitconsulting.com. Your journey to business brilliance starts now.
And one last quick thing. If you enjoyed this episode, please stay on after the show to learn more about the Braving Business podcast and other great episodes for you to discover. And now, let's get the show started. Well, hello there.
Hey, brother. How are you?
I am well.
That was somewhere between "Hey, bud" and "Hey, brother."
I know.
Instead of being "Hey, brud."
I've been called worse, so I'll take brud.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. How are you?
No ass first.
Oh gosh, darn it! I'm okay. I'm doing well. How about you, sir?
I'm okay. I just had an interesting experience. I went to see Cyndi Lauper in concert, which I was really looking forward to, because I don't know if you know this, but she has not done a concert series since 1986.
Oh my gosh.
She'd done some Broadway, but she hadn't done a tour. So I was looking forward to it, and she filled Amalie Arena in Tampa Bay. And the design of the show was top notch. But her singing, ouch.
Oh really? Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, we're getting to the age now where that happens.
Like,
did you see Stevie Nicks on SNL?
Did I? No.
Oh, she was great. But the first song she sang is one that no one knew. It was like a new song. And when it first started, I was like, oh boy, this is rough. This is a little rough. She caught her stride later, but it was at first, I was like, eesh, oh boy.
I mean, we all age, you know, it's tough. I can appreciate her maybe not being as mindful of how she sounds. I'm a little surprised that, you know, people in her entourage aren't, let's put it this way. There should be a significant weight given to recordings, and her mic should be a lot lower. That would be my recommendation. I don't know. Maybe that's unkind. Sarah, have you seen a concert where, you know, maybe, or listened to someone that you wonder, man, what happened to that guy or gal? Their voice is not what it used to be.
Do you know, I was really hoping to go and see Sting, and I saw like a clip of it on TV recently, and I was like, yeah, I think I'll leave it in my head. You know, don't meet your heroes and all that.
It's funny you said it, because we got in the car, we actually listened to recordings of her, because we really needed to just restore that sound.
Yeah.
Anyway, PJ, why don't we introduce Sarah and get the show on the road?
Absolutely. So today we have the fantastic Miss Sarah Hurley, a remarkable entrepreneur whose journey is a testament to the power of resilience, self-belief, and just sheer determination. Sarah started her company, SH Brands Group, with nothing more than her last 40 pounds sterling, which what is like 52 bucks or something like that, right around there, and turned it into a seven-figure global licensing empire in just 5 years. But Sarah's story goes much deeper than just business success. Growing up in poverty with a single mother and without a father in her life, Sarah learned early that hard work and education were the keys to a better future. So she taught herself everything that she could about business, using every spare moment to empower herself. Her journey was not without challenges, however. She survived an abusive first marriage, and after finding love again, tragically lost her second husband just 5 years ago. Oh my gosh, I'm sorry. This profound loss inspired Sarah to launch the Sarah Hurley Academy, dedicated to helping others achieve financial freedom and their own versions of success. And unlike many, Sarah's approach is grounded in reality, teaching sustainable business principles rather than making unrealistic promises. Over the years, she's created over 50 brands and sold over 30 million licensed products, all while staying true to her mission of giving back. Sarah believes that the journey, no matter how difficult, only makes us stronger. And today, she's here to share her powerful story of overcoming adversity, building resilience, and lifting up others along the way. Sarah, welcome to the Braving Business Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Of course.
Sarah, what a story. Over the three seasons that we've been on the air, we've had a number of incredibly inspiring people with incredibly inspiring stories. Our second episode, we had a woman that lost her sight and used that as motivation to build AI for people that are blind. So it always inspires me, as someone that himself didn't grow up with a silver spoon, to bring on the air people who can share a story that I think for many people in the audience, not only represents a closer version of their life story, but they can draw a lot more inspiration and potentially some specific life lessons from. So you grew up with very little, and you had to teach yourself business skills from scratch and some other skills. Mm-hmm. What was one pivotal moment in your childhood that made you believe you could break the cycle and create a successful life for yourself?
For me, I was very lucky that my mum, she brought me up in a certain way. We always had books, was always told the power of education, you could be anything. And my mum was never that person that was like, when you get married, when you have babies, or, you know, if I say I want to be an astronaut, she wouldn't kind of laugh at it or anything else. And she would very much be like, oh, cool. So like when you get fitted for your spacesuit, this will happen, you know? So nothing was made to feel impossible. Everything felt very available and very possible. So I kind of grew up, I guess, in some ways a little bit naive in that I didn't know that probably a lot of things were not going to be available to me until I got to kind of 14, 15 at school, you know, when you start seeing careers advisors and stuff and they start going, well, you won't be able to afford that education path, or you won't be able to afford to do that. And by that point, I was so strong-minded in that, well, I can do that. I can do it. You've just got to find a way. So I was never told no. I was never told you can't. I was always told that if you work hard enough and you learn enough and you keep going, you can do anything. So I suppose my pivotal moment really is just my mum's encouragement, my granddad's. You know, my granddad was very supportive and educational and very much took on like the father role in my life as well. So I suppose those two people really shaped me.
Wow. Wow. So you went ahead, you kind of plowed through all the self-doubt. You believed in yourself. You took the advice of your older familial influencers, which is fantastic. And then you started a business with just 40 pounds in your pocket, and you grew it to a seven-figure company. How did you navigate those early days? And when resources obviously were not even just limited, they just weren't there. And how did you find the confidence to keep going?
Again, there was sort of no planning. And I guess that kind of naivety and the not knowing helped me. So when I started with the 40 pounds, my thing was literally just, I'd just been made redundant from a job that I didn't even want. And I thought, well, I may as well have a go at something I'd actually like to do. And so my goal at that point was just to illustrate some books to, you know, maybe some children's books or some creative products. And so I just started sending stuff out to people. It was just that really. Just no one's, until like later on in my career, and people are like, you can't just email the CEO. And I was like, oh, why? You know, why can't I ask those questions? And so, you know, the lack of money. So what happened was I actually sent some stuff. I was sending stuff out to people and I got a call from a TV shopping channel and they said to me, come in and see us. So I actually spent that last 40 pounds on a train ticket to go and see them. And they said, your stuff is amazing. We'd like to launch your products on TV in 4 weeks. And I went, great. And then on the train home went, but I've got no money to manufacture those products. So my first port of call was, right, okay, what can I give someone? So what I could give someone was some TV exposure. So I was about to have an hour of live TV. And what product could I create that would work well with someone else's product that maybe wasn't exciting on its own, but if I showed it with my product, they would sponsor me and that would pay for the manufacturing of my product. So I created a craft kit that needed some colouring. And I contacted a marker brand, because on their own, markers are not very exciting unless you show what they can do. And I asked if they would sponsor it. They would get their logo all over my packaging. I would also sell their products alongside mine on TV. And they would get that hour of TV exposure with me also talking about how great their products were. And they were the must-have thing to go with mine. And they agreed. And that paid for my first manufacturing run. And it went from there. And I reinvested and reinvested and reinvested. And I didn't take a penny out for at least 2 years. And just kept putting money back in. But I was never afraid to ask the question, because that's the most important thing. If you don't ask, you don't get.
So let's break that down, because there's a lot of wisdom there and a particular takeaway, which is opportunity knocks. And it is not necessarily the case that when opportunity knocks, you are well positioned to take advantage of it. In fact, most of the time, when opportunities present themselves, it's not quite convenient. There may be a job, a child, an illness, or lack of resources. And in those moments, what one consistent theme that I've seen from guests, and I'm hearing it from you, is that people that end up being successful don't view that as a stop sign. They view that as a challenge to overcome. And they view their mission at that point to determine a path. They are unwilling to view it as an indication that it's not meant to be, which some people might, that kind of logic is prevalent among people that achieve less, but rather they are determined to determine how to make it be. So again, I know that your mother taught you to believe in yourself and the value of education, but there's something else there. There's something in you created that path to ingenuity. So talk about that. I mean, that kind of a mindset is oftentimes what's critical in moments like the one you faced. Opportunities there, you have to show ingenuity. You were able to. Where did you find the gumption or the wherewithal in moments like that? Time pressure, you have a month to even figure out that there was a path that you didn't think, oh my gosh, a month, even if I found someone to sponsor me, it's not enough time, et cetera, et cetera. You found a way to yes. Talk to me about that mindset.
So first off, the opportunity that I got wasn't the opportunity that I wanted. Okay. What I really wanted to do was illustrate a children's book. I had visions of me sitting at home coloring in like Beatrix Potter. That's what I wanted to do. I have no aspirations to be on TV whatsoever, but it was an opportunity and it was the only one on the table. So for me, it's always about making the most of what you've got in the moment. There's only one opportunity on the table. Take it, make it work, say yes and figure it out, because you may only get that one opportunity. And I know that so many people will say, you know, opportunities come around all the time. And that's a really lovely mindset. But in reality, it doesn't always happen that way. So for me, I figure if it feeds into the end goal somehow, even if I have to tweak it later, I'll take it, I'll make it work, and then I'll come back and I'll figure it out. And I think that the key to that mindset is always that you have to think about what the other person wants. Because if I'd have just gone to that company and said, can you pay for this? They would have said no. But by going to them and say, how would you like an hour of free TV coverage plus your logo on a product that I've been told is going to sell out 1,500 units in that hour? Suddenly that looks like a much more interesting proposition to that company. And so for me, it's always been, you know, service over sales. What can I give you? I'm not trying to sell you anything. What can I give you? And then I get what I want in return. So again, that opportunity was not the one I wanted, but I knew that later on I could tweak it and I could turn it into something better.
I absolutely love this. I absolutely love this. So first of all, I wanted to just point out something that you said in regards to the job that you had just been redundant for, because it was a job that you didn't like. And what a blessing that was. Right? What a positive blessing that was for you to sit there and say, you know what? Forget all this. I'm going to go do what I need to do. And I'm mentioning that because as entrepreneurs, we also have to be mindful that we don't want to create environments where our employees don't like their jobs. So that's just something to keep in mind. Sarah obviously is an amazing entrepreneur and I'm sure you were a fantastic employee. Just as an entrepreneur, you just got to keep in mind, keep the company culture good, because otherwise great talent will walk. So that's just the one point that I wanted to make. But secondly, congrats to you. I love the fact that not only did you take the opportunity, but you were so laser focused on making the most of that opportunity, and to be able to say, okay, here's what I have. What is everything else that I can attend to focus on that, to make that work? And I just have nothing but respect and kudos for you for being able to realize, okay, I want to do children's book, but this is something in TV. What can make this work now? Because I have this opportunity. I'm not going to blow it. And you just willed it to happen. And I think that's fantastic. And I'm proud of you. I don't know you, but I'm very proud of you. And I think it's very cool that you did that.
Do you know, I think that's such an important thing, even for people. Like when I was in jobs previously, like before I started my company, and obviously you do various jobs and you kind of bounce around, right? And I've had jobs since I was like 13. And every job, you know, I hear people all the time go, I hate my job, I hate my job. Try and take something from it. If you laser focus on what your goal is. So for me, every job was a refining process. I learned something I loved and something I hated. Even when I worked in a shoe shop, I hated the actual, you know, helping people put shoes on part of it. But I loved actually listening to people and hearing what they wanted, because often what they came in for wasn't what they wanted. So if you listen to them and you find out what they want, then you can go, oh, actually what you're looking for is this. So all of these kind of jobs and things along the way for me was a refining process of, right, I've learned I love this and I don't like that. And in my next job, I want more of that and less of that. And it was all moving up to that. And I think learning those skills and learning how to refine down what you love and what you don't love helps you become more successful later.
Well said.
You know, I definitely well said. And a couple of points there, I think, that are worth using out. One, you learn from that job, that the you know, helping people put on shoes, which, you know, literally probably not the physically most pleasant thing in the world to have to do, that people oftentimes come to places, in this case to buy shoes, and don't actually know what they want. And having someone that is extremely attentive and is frankly interested in helping them find what they want is a strength. So a lot of people in service jobs, or a lot of people just starting out in their careers, don't see the opportunity to learn the massive skill of becoming in tune to what people are saying, and the massive power that you can gain if you become a master at listening to people and helping tease out for them what they truly want. That's a huge mastery. I think the second part is that what a lot of people do that fall short in their lives is complain, but they don't actually have a solution. They just want to complain. And if there's anything I've learned in my life, some of this has been relatively recent learning, is that there are a few behaviors that are particularly corrosive to your success. Complaining, criticizing, those are two of the worst behaviors you can engage in. Oftentimes we bring that home to our partner, we bitch, we moan, we don't take into consideration that they've also had a tough day, and we're just bringing negativity in. When you bring a negativity into your mind or into your home, it takes away from your powers and your energy. So it's something that you should be mindful of. It's clear that you are. Let's talk about the fact you've created over 50 brands and sold millions of products. Yet one thing that's interesting, in the pre-interview, you emphasized success isn't all, quote, diamonds and jet skis. What's a common misconception about success that you wish more people understood?
I think for me, people put success down to a particular number or a particular thing, or they look at someone else and they go, well, that person's driving X car, so I've got to have X car to keep up, or they've got this particular type of house. And I've mentored, I mentored someone a couple of years ago who said to me, I want to be like you. And I said to her, but you've got three children. And she went, yeah, I know, but I want to be like you. And I said to her, I work 16 hours a day. I spend, at the time, it was something like 40 weeks of my year traveling and at shows and at events and, you know, out of the country. How will you see your three young children? And she went, oh, no, I can't do any of that. I went, so you don't want to be like me. What's your version of success? And that's the biggest misconception, is that it looks like something, or you can quantify it in some way. I genuinely thought when I hit that first million that I'd be like, ta-da, you know, that moment where you're on stage and all the gold foil comes down. I thought it'd be like that. But in reality, it was just another day. And I can't even really remember that day anymore. That's not what it's about. It's about that feeling inside yourself of having purpose and wanting to get up in the morning and wanting to do your job. And that for me is success. And that for most people is what is success, is are you happy? It's not a number. It's not a jet ski. It's not a car. It's really not. It's not a thing. You can't quantify it. It's a feeling.
Mm. Are you successful?
Yeah. I think I am successful, yeah. And again, that's not down to a number or anything I own. It's to do with the fact that I'm very happy with my life.
Well, that's awesome. Tal, what's your definition of success? I'll get to the questions real fast, but what's your definition of success?
Wow. That's a difficult question to answer. I mean, I think the definition of success is feeling that you're living the life you're meant to live, doing the things that bring you joy, and are surrounded by people that you love and who love you.
That's also awesome. I would quantify it as being able to help others breathe. And what I mean by that is, if I'm in a position to help others monetarily, philosophically, emotionally, whatever, that means that I myself am in a good spot already. So if I can help other people breathe or give them some relief in some way, then I think I'm pretty successful, right? So, it's just me. But very, very cool. So you have talked about, Miss Sarah, sorry, back to you. You've talked about restructuring your business every few years to focus on what actually makes you happy. So what's your process for deciding when it's time to make that pivot? And how do you stay true to what actually fulfills you?
So, very simply, my marker for when I know I need to do that is when it stops becoming fun. And that sounds really basic and really simple, and it makes me sound really childlike. But actually, I think if something is making you miserable, you need to find a way to make it stop. And for most people, I always think there's one of five things that makes you start a business. Okay, there's money, fame or ego, whichever way you want to look at it, legacy, purpose or fun. For me, I thought my driver was money until I got money. And then I realized, actually, I'm more interested. Obviously, you need enough to be able to live and breathe. But then once you get to that point where you're comfortable, for me, it was actually about fun. And so when I stop having fun, I know it's time for me to look and review and go, right, okay, what's pulling me back? What's dragging me down? Because if there's one thing that's out of sync with everything else, then it will affect everything else. Because if there's one thing on that list that I don't want to do, I'll avoid everything. So as soon as I get to that point where I'm looking at my to-do list going, oh, I just can't, I know it's time to review. And then it's time to revisit. What is the end goal? What are the things that feed into the end goal? What am I doing because I feel I should do it, or because it looks like someone else's version of success? You know, they're doing it, so I should be doing that. And then I cut out everything that doesn't feed that end goal, that doesn't bring me joy, that doesn't make me happy. And that's not necessarily an overnight process of like banging the door shut, but it could be that I sell that bit on, or I license that bit, or I outsource that bit, or I delegate that bit. And I just gradually restructure and change and make adjustments as necessary. I think that's a really, really important thing.
Do you have a personal practice to stay connected to yourself? Because to do what you've just described requires taking the time to actually think about how you feel, something that surprisingly a lot of people don't do. So what is your practice to actually even be able to come to the conclusion that you're not happy?
I know myself. I know exactly what I want. I know the end goal, and I keep very, like you said earlier, very laser focused on that end goal. And you can kind of see things go off kilter, and then I will notice things in my personal habits, like, you know, you stop kind of taking care of yourself. I don't drink as much water as I should, and I don't go to the gym as much as I should, and I'm sleeping more, and all of those kind of things that you think, actually, I'm not in a place I should be. I'm not doing the things that make me feel good. And so that's when you have to kind of look and go, right, okay, let's revisit the end goal again. What's gone wrong and where? And quite often it's because I say yes to something because I feel I should do it, or because I feel I owe someone something, or because I think it's a really good idea at the time, but actually it didn't quite pan out how I would like. And you have to kind of backtrack it a little bit without making it look like you've failed, I guess. You know, you have to kind of get out of a situation gracefully. But I have no problem in saying, do you know what, that just didn't work out. That's fine.
Very cool. So you have been called, and I understand that you provide this to us, obviously. So you've been called a pushy little madam, which I actually kind of love, in your industry. Why are you called that? And how did this label, you know, did this label have any effect on you or not?
So this came about in the very early days of me starting. I'd done my first two, I think, shows on Shopping TV. And I was speaking to a manufacturer via email about making some product, him licensing my product. And I went to my first trade show and I was very nervous. Obviously, you go to this massive trade show. And I spotted this guy on his stand. And I thought, right, well, if I go up and say hello to him, I'll feel more confident because that's someone that I know, right? So I went up and I'm excited, you know, and I'm kind of bouncing off the walls a little bit. And I'm like, hi, I'm Sarah Hurley. And he looked around. I mean, he wasn't busy or talking to anyone or anything, but he sort of looked around and went, oh, you're such a pushy little madam. And in that moment, I was mortified. I could feel myself shrinking into myself. And in that moment, yeah, it took my power out. It took the wind out of my sails. Yeah, God, that was a hard moment, you know, thinking back on that, it was a hard moment. But what I took some time to regroup. And I went back into that show. And by the way, I now have a large section of that show that's named for my academy. So I really took that power back. And I reframed that completely. And now I'm actually really proud of the pushy little madam title. And I use it myself because I think if you reframe it in your head, it takes the power out of it. And I remember this quote from, I think it was Salma Hayek, who said, if someone shouted at you in a language you didn't understand, it'd have no power because you didn't understand it. Mm. And it's all about how you reframe that moment. And that really stuck with me. And yeah, once I reframed it, I thought, yeah, that's a really good thing to be, because you should, if I'm not pushing for my dream, who is?
If you're not doing enough to get a title, right? I mean, I think reframing is so important because it gives you the space to give yourself the grace and the foundation you need to move forward. And people can be very blithe about, you know, how they affect people or the words they use, right? Obviously, this gentleman was in a moment of exasperation or who knows what, but
yeah,
but it wasn't, as we would say, it isn't cool, right? It wasn't the right thing to do. And the fact that you were able to kind of take that and say, all right, you took the wind out of my sails, but now I'm going to go ahead and get my footing about me and approach it from a different way, I think is perfect, right? It's exactly what you should do. Also, after the show, share his name and address with me and Tal, and we'll go have words with him.
We'll take care of it. Yeah, we'll take care of it for sure. You know, I was thinking as you were reflecting on that, and for those of you watching on YouTube, you might have noticed there, I was getting emotional about that. That was a moment that was searing. And many of us have had moments like that in our lives, whether professional or in our personal lives, that really impact us. And I remember, you know, being a teenager and having my shirt off and having someone comment on the way my chest looked. And it is stuck in my head ever since. It doesn't matter, you know, how many, you know, chest curls I've done since I was never able to get that out of my head. So that's something that's a power we have as people to harm others that we should be very mindful of. If you're going to say something nasty or do something nasty, there's another human being on the other side of that. And the power of reframe is something we own. How we think is how we feel. You have every opportunity at moments like that to recognize whoever said that, that's, even if that's their opinion, you know, as they say, people are entitled to their opinions. We all have them, much like we all have certain body parts and we only have one of. I'm not going to go there, but the bottom line is it doesn't make it appropriate and it does make him an a-hole. So maybe I guess I will go there a little bit. Sarah, let's talk about the Sarah Hurley Academy. It's all about empowering others to find their version of success. Is there a story or a person that really was inspiring to you? Something that someone that perhaps you saw in the early stages and then you saw them take this to a place that made you proud?
So I started the academy because of experiences that happened in my life and, you know, mentoring people and realizing some of the advice that they'd received and just thinking, oh my gosh, like you're being told such irresponsible things and that shouldn't be allowed. Or we're all, you know, pushing you towards one goal. That's not your goal. Like there was no listening, there was no feedback. And I thought, actually, I can do this so much better. And after my husband died and seeing some of the things that I saw, that was my final oomph to like go for it and really push for it. And seeing the effect that the way that I teach has on people has pushed me to keep going. And it's really become like the passion project of my last 2 years.
Wow. Mm. So how do you, first of all, I'm so sorry you've gone through that, right? You've, you had to deal with an abusive marriage the first time around. The second time around, you lose him, right? It's two of the worst endings of marriages that I can think of. So I'm very sorry that you went through that. How do you avoid getting mired in the feelings of feeling sorry for yourself? And how do you avoid succumbing to that kind of pain that allows you to keep putting that one foot in front of the other? Like what's that inner mantra that you have going on or you know, what do you do to help you through that?
Purpose. It's literally that purpose. So straight away, I mean, after my first marriage, I just kind of jumped back in. You get on with life. You know, I felt blessed to be out of it, to be honest. So I just felt free and excited about life again. So that was, you know, it was a good experience. As much as it was a bad experience, it led to a good experience. And then after my husband died, it was just literally about purpose. And I thought, right, how can I, again, reframe this and make it into something that will drive me forward? Because if I give up and I just sit at home crying, it doesn't do justice to his life. It doesn't do justice to the relationship we had. And so for me, it was like, how do I push forward? And while I was caring for him during those, you know, the 3 years I cared for him, I saw so many women who not only were losing their partner, but they were losing their breadwinner. They were losing their homes. They were having to downsize. They were having to choose the days they could visit their husband and all of these things. And I thought, this shouldn't be a thing. Like, we should all have financial freedom. And that doesn't mean being a millionaire. That's where I say, you know, it's not diamonds and jet skis. It's about being able to say, you know, my husband's sick and I want to visit him every day. And I want to, you know, have the freedom to do that. Or he wants to do this before he dies and I can pay for that. You know, all of those things. Or, you know, there's an experimental treatment. We're going to go all in. We're going to try this. You know, all of those things hit me. And so taking that and making it my purpose gave me that, like, that purpose to get up in the morning. I'm going to keep driving forward. I'm going to keep going. I'm going to keep pushing because I want to help other people in that situation. I know what that feels like. And I just want to be able to help people to push forward and to turn that pain around a little bit. Just having that freedom to kind of breathe out and go, right, all I have to focus on is that. All of that other stuff will take care of itself.
Are there mostly women who come to the Sarah Hurley Academy? How do people find out about the Sarah Hurley Academy?
So it is mostly women, and I think that's partly because of my story, and partly because generally what we see is, and you know, all the research backs this up, is that being widowed affects men and women differently. So men, it's a much more emotional thing of like they feel lonely and they're learning to do all these things for themselves. And for women, obviously we have the emotional thing, but we have all these practical things as well of like, if the husband's been the breadwinner, especially if you've been raising a family and things like that, you suddenly have all these other concerns. You know, and there's things like, you know, if the house is in his name or the mortgage is in his name and all of those kind of things that maybe you haven't really been switched on to until you know, someone dies, as they say, you know, we all have a plan until someone gets punched in the face. And it's like being punched in the face repeatedly until you kind of go, oh my gosh, like I need to do these things.
Yeah. I have a tremendous amount of respect for you. My wife was diagnosed with breast cancer, and luckily, we caught it early, and you know, her prognosis is excellent. It's still a slog, right? It's still a tremendous amount to go through and everything. And I kind of expected a little bit of time where there was going to be a pity party and, you know, a woe is me and everything, but, she found out, and maybe an hour she was sad. And then the rest was, you know what, the only way is through. And, we're going to get on this horse and we're going to ride it until we're done. And so, I have a lot of respect for you for everything that you've been through and that drive to keep going. So kudos to you on that. I wanted to ask about the very soon release. I'm sure you're very excited about your first business book. So can you give us a little sneak peek into what readers can expect and like the core message that you're trying to share out there?
So this is all focused on lessons I've learned during business. And these are not like, this is how you do a balance sheet. It's really practical, hands-on lessons of things I've learned, things to be aware of. The stuff people don't tell you is everything that I've tried to put in this book. And I've already actually got like my leftover notes for book two. So yeah, and it's called Pushy Little Madam. Yeah.
Nice. Love it. Love it. Well, we're going to have Sarah, I don't know if you're aware of this, but you or your team, whoever reached out to us, has committed you to write a blog post. And so we're going to try to get a blog post, maybe one of those lessons, give people a taste of what they may find when they pick up the book. I want to finish on a lighter note. You mentioned to us that you trained to be a lawyer and you had dreams of joining MI5. For those of you who are not in the UK, that's the equivalent of... Is that the FBI or the CIA? I should probably know that. I think it's, is MI5 the CIA or the FBI's equivalent?
I think it's FBI.
I don't know. Is it FBI?
I think it's FBI, yeah.
Okay. Well, I probably should have known that before I asked the question, but I didn't. you pivoted just a week into the job. So what's the story behind that abrupt career change?
So I really love law and I'm so interested in it. And I loved the study of law. And I had all these high hopes, you know, I'd watched all these kind of drama series. There's one British drama series called Spooks, which if you watch it, is amazing. It's from the early 2000s. But it's such a kind of, you know, exciting kind of drama. And I had these visions of me like racing through London and finding dead drops and stuff. And then when I started doing, so you start off kind of in chambers looking at cases. And the first thing I realized was cases are allocated kind of first come, first serve. And I have a very strong sense of justice. And I thought there's absolutely no way that I could defend someone if I knew they were guilty. So straight away, I started thinking, maybe this isn't for me. I need to find a way to pivot into MI5 really quickly. So I started applying for kind of admin jobs there. And I got through like the first round of questions. And then they start telling you about how you have to sign the National Secrets Act and all of these kind of things. And I thought to myself, you need to be realistic here, right? Because it's a massive commitment. It's a life-changing commitment. I'm a little bit chatty. Especially if I've had a vodka or two. I don't really drink anymore, but if I've had a vodka or two, I'm definitely really chatty. And I thought there are going to be national secrets all over London. And I just cannot do this because I am a liability in this position. So
effectively, you were trying to keep yourself out of prison. That's what I'm hearing.
And alive would be really good. Mm-hmm. And also, I feel right. like I'm protecting my country just by not doing it. So I'm going to carry on.
I love it.
Create mm-hmm. products. That's safe. It's a safe area for me.
My assumption was you didn't like the wig. I mean, I don't know if they still have to do it, but you didn't like the wig that you'd have to wear if you went to court. Is that a thing? You know, do they still have to wear wigs?
The barristers? You do have to wear a wig, but I liked it. I thought it looked really cool. I was really excited about the wig. I was really excited about all the processes, but it was all the other bits that I hadn't really considered. So as soon as the reality started kicking in, I was like, oh, okay, maybe not for me.
That's funny. Well, you know what? For those of you who are going to potentially have the opportunity to do business with Sarah, you know how to potentially get the best deal possible. A couple of options. and you're gonna get a more pliant partner on the other side. Sarah, it's been a great pleasure. We'd love to have you back when the book is out and talk about it. We're delighted to have you. Incredibly, the Braving Business Podcast, we're a top 1% global podcast popularity, not just in business but for all podcasts. And about a third of our listenership is overseas, and a fair bit of it's in the UK. So we're really grateful to you and your team for reaching out to us and for choosing to be with us today. And thank you to all of you listening to us on across the pond. And you know, for sure, you're a shining example of what the Braving Business Podcast is all about. Someone that pulled themselves up by their own bootstraps. Second, someone that refused to be cowed by a whole range of challenges, showed resilience every step of the way from go, showed ingenuity, cares about other people. I mean, you are what this podcast is about, and I'm truly, truly grateful for you for spending time with us today.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
And that's a wrap, folks. Like what you heard, want to support the show? Please follow our page on LinkedIn and Facebook. Visit us on YouTube, and please like and rate us on all of your favorite podcast streaming services. You can also see exclusive content, subscribe for free to our weekly blog, support our sponsors, and soon buy our merchandise at www.bravingbusiness.com. Thanks for being a part of our production, and we'll see you next time on the Braving Business Podcast.